Nacholand Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the fourth episode of the Calcioland podcast during the international break. I'm very pleased that we've chugged two episodes a week, even during this time of year when it's a little bit harder to find subjects to discuss. But today we have Serie A coming back over the weekend. So we have game picks. Thousand Names is on fire. I'm going to make my game picks as well. With our guests, we are going to have kind of a derby della capitale. We have our friend Sean McIntosh to give us an overview of what's been going on at Lazio so far this year. And we are going to close with our dear friend John Solano. Him and I did a doubleheader. I did his podcast, AS Roma Press, and he hopped on our podcast to give us an overview of Roma. In between that, we'll answer your Twitter questions and have a special segment for our patrons. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our dear friend, the producer, co-host of the show, Alex. So, Alex, there's two topics I wanted to talk to you about that with Serie A coming back. Let's start there. I know we've talked a lot about Juve and Inter recently. Napoli have not gotten off, at least in Serie A, to the best of starts. So as it stands now, they are at 13 points. They are behind Atalanta at 16, Inter at 18, and Juve at 19. But do you think, Alex, it's way too soon to write them off as a potential contender for the Scudetto, or do you think they could come back in?
Yeah, I think it's too soon. I think it's too soon to write them off because they're not dreadfully behind. And I kind of like their schedule coming up. They face Hellas Verona this weekend, and it's at Napoli, so that should be 3 points. And then they have Spal. It's away to Spal, but still, that should be three. And a great game hosting Atalanta and then away to Roma. But if they can get 3 points in those four Serie A games, and I expect them to at least get 3 points in three out of those four, they should be fine. I think this is an important period coming up, David, for Napoli, because considering they are already behind Juventus and Inter and they're not even in third, yeah, they got to do well over this next stretch. Before the next international break, they really need to pick it up a bit, but I'm not counting them out. I'm not overly worried about their whole season anyway. I mean, obviously, I don't have them pegged to win the Scudetto, but they're not out of the race. So I think both can be true. And I still think having players like Irvin Chucky Lozano and Manolis and just still some new faces to the team, there's no way this is the best version of Napoli. The best version of Napoli, I would imagine, would be during the springtime, to be honest. So hopefully they're not too far behind by then. But I think this is a really important stretch coming up for Napoli. But I expect them to do well over this next stretch. And going into the next international break, we could be looking at three or four teams possibly in the Scudetto conversation. With that said, still think it's going to be Juve. But no, I think it's too soon to count them out. David, what about you?
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm looking at it from a narrative perspective. I can kind of see how they are in the darlings of the narrative. And here's what I mean. We, of course, have Conte and Marotta at Inter trying to compete against their former team, Juve. So we have that sexy storyline. We have Atalanta, who, you know, none of us expected to really repeat what they did last season. They've been even better in Serie A, so there's already talk that maybe they are Serie A's version of Leicester. I mean, I wouldn't go quite that far, but I can see the parallel. So those are sexy storylines. I feel like Napoli have been the runner-up for a few years in a row, and as you mentioned, not the best start, but also not catastrophic. So I can see why they're not mentioned as much in the narrative, and then perception becomes reality. You mentioned the schedule. You mentioned the new players. Really valid points. The other things, too, and, you know, I did a column earlier this week for our friends at Euro Fantasy Game, and I ranked the teams in Serie A by who has the highest margin for improvement, and I think Napoli's really towards the top. And look, you know, Di Lorenzo's been great. Lozano got off to a pretty good start, then has been struggling a little bit recently. Manolas has been okay, not great yet. Llorente's been really good, but what Napoli has been lacking is a lot of their own core players that they've relied to in years past to really take them over the edge. Aren't off to a great start. Koulibaly, I mean, how many times did we mention him in our losers segment this year? I think more already than all of last season. So we have Insigne, who Napoli is working with Raiola and Ancelotti to kind of get that situation under control. My boy Milik has yet to score in Serie A. Even Allan, who was such a stud for them for a while, hasn't gotten off to a great start to the season. And I expect all those players to turn it around. So, yeah, I think Napoli, definitely a lot of margin for improvement. And we wanted to kind of wet your beak with this talk here because I am trying to bring back Napoli outsider to give us an overview on the team. So before we get to game picks, let's switch gears, Alex. I want to talk to you a little bit about a transfer rumor that is fairly interesting. And look, I find transfer rumors this time of year tend to be really premature unless there's a particular situation. And Mario Mandzukic is definitely in a particular situation. He's off Juve's Champions League list. He's essentially frozen out of the squad. Doesn't seem even has been training with the team that much. We know he came close to leaving in the summer, and then he almost went to a club in Qatar a few weeks, weeks ago, but now the transfer window there is closed. They certainly expect him to go in January. So he's been linked to Man United once again. We know he came pretty close to joining them at the end of the summer. So I want to ask you this question, and I saw this on the Twitter account from our friend at the United Stand, a great account. I know you're very familiar with them as well. And he said that he'd rather have Wayne Rooney than Mario Mandzukic. So I want to ask you, Alex, as a Chelsea fan, what would scare you more, Mandzukic at Man United or Rooney at Man United?
You know, in my opinion, it's a great question, and it could be funny to some, but I can spin it both ways. I mean, they're both 33 years old. One is coming out of playing from the MLS, and one, of course, is playing in one of the best clubs in the world. However, I think Mandzukic is probably the player that would scare me more in terms of, I think he'd have at this point in his career, despite them being the same age, I think he'd have more important moments to offer to Manchester United. And let's keep in mind that right now Manchester United don't have a true striker. They have Anthony Martial playing there. He's not a true striker. They have Marcus Rashford playing there. He's not a true striker. They have a youngster, Mason Greenwood, playing there. He's not a true striker. Mandzukic, even though we know he has versatility and can play in different spots, he can be definitely a true striker. Wayne Rooney has never been a true striker. So maybe Mandzukic fits the biggest need of the two. And I just see Mandzukic getting some annoying, from my perspective, clutch goals for Manchester United. So there's definitely an argument to be made there that Mandzukic would be the better signing for Manchester United. However, I do feel like saying Wayne Rooney here. And I guess I'm higher on Mandzukic, like I said, the player and what he could specifically offer himself. But David, right now, Manchester United are just not in a good spot. They really are not in a good spot. It feels not toxic, but it just feels completely shambolic. It feels just out of sorts. And it's just a mess at Manchester United. It really, really is. And I love it as a Chelsea fan. But I feel like they need some higher power. They need some really good feeling or vibe to kind of bless their team right now. And it's funny. I thought Wayne Rooney for the longest time was a great player, one of the best of this generation, but he was never a player that actually made you feel an immense impact, or he didn't have the same type of grasp on a game that Ronaldo or Messi ever did. And I never really even saw him as a true leader. But in this case, bringing back somebody like Wayne Rooney, who obviously means so much to Manchester United, he might be exactly what they need to get everybody else playing well. So I almost feel like Wayne Rooney might just, the storyline of him coming back could potentially make all of Manchester United players around him play better. But I think Mandzukic specifically, the player, would be the more impactful signing. So it's really tough. I guess I still haven't given you an answer. I'll go to Wayne Rooney on this one. But I totally hear the argument for Mandzukic because, like I said, I think he probably has more to offer as a player. So there it is. 51% Rooney, 49% Mandzukic. So David, now that I've really talked through that out loud, let's be a little bit more realistic. Do you think Mandzukic to Manchester United is realistic?
Well, let me ride for my man, Mandzukic. You guys know he's one of my favorites. I know right now there's a lot of buzz because he's off the Champions League squad. That really isn't a reflection so much of his ability, really numbers game for Juve. Let's remember that this time last year, he was coming off being the main striker on the team that was in the World Cup final. That was the storyline in the World Cup. And he was a starter at Juve, was considered one of the favorites for the Champions League. So that out of the way, let's talk about how realistic it is. And look, we know Man United tried to sign him at very end of the summer transfer window. There were numerous reports that Mandzukic just didn't want to be rushed into a transfer right at the last second. Maybe it was an ego thing or whatnot. And, you know, he also really liked being at Juve. He was a victim, though, of like the switch from Sarri to Allegri. As much as I like Mandzukic, I really don't see him as a fit in what Sarri does. So the link to Man United is, for one, they tried in the past. And then there's even more buzz on Allegri potentially being Man United's next manager. We talked about it in our first episode in October. If you have yet to check it out, we talked about it right at the top. We had talked about Fabrizio Romano's report that Allegri was studying English because he was targeting the Man United job, and Man United had him on the short list of potential replacements for Solskjaer. Allegri did another interview yesterday. He was at an event and he said that his English isn't good enough yet, but he did say yet and that he's working on it when he was asked on Man United. It's not surprising to me that on top of Allegri, both Mandzukic and Emre Can are linked to Man United. Those are the two players that are off Juve's Champions League squad. They are players that earn big salaries. I'm sure Juve, in the right circumstances, would be happy to move both. With Emre Can, they could also make a massive plusvalenza. They did sign him on a Bosman deal. They amortized the agent fee over 2 years. I think it was 16 million total, 8 million a year. So they could make a really nice return on Emre Can. I had predicted that maybe Emre Can could see some time at right back at Juve, but that turned out to be Cuadrado in that role. So it really wouldn't shock me if Juve looks at moving Emre Can as an opportunity for plusvalenza. We know Juve and Man United have a very good relationship. Transfer of Mandzukic, Emre Can could then open the door for Pogba coming back to Juve. Not sure if that part could happen in January, but I could see Emre Can and Mandzukic somewhat realistic, especially Mandzukic. The other thing is Mandzukic has been linked to Milan as well. I am extremely skeptical on that one. We'll get into that in the Twitter questions on Milan's recent financial statement. But to me, the last thing Milan needs, and I really like Mandzukic, is to have a veteran that earns a huge salary that isn't a definite starter on that team, because they need to get Piontek going again. They have Leao. They're trying to get Rebic going. So I like Mandzukic. And, you know, I think on the right circumstance, Milan should get a veteran to help the team. But it has to be at a position that they clearly need. Adding a player that earns, you know, I think Mandzukic is close to 5 million net a season, considering Milan's financial situation, to me, that doesn't make any sense. So that's Mandzukic, Allegri, and all. Thanks for the support. We love all the Man United fans that listen for the transfer news, but we hope you stick around for the Calcio stuff, because we have a lot of cool content on Serie A.
Yeah, amen. Come for the transfers, stay for the Calcio. All right, David, well, I'm so glad this segment is back, because it means that real football, no offense to the international break, but real football is back. Club football is back. So let's do our typical Thursday or Friday segment of game picks with you and Thousand Names. What do we have for this weekend?
So I'm warning you, 1,000 names, I think, really prepared for this one during the break. By now, you guys know the drill. He sends me his picks on 3 matches. I'm going to make mine as well. If you want to get all my picks, become a patron, and I post them before the match day starts. So first match, Bologna traveling to Turin to face Juve. I have a feeling I'll be laughing a lot during these. 1,000 has Bologna winning 3-2. Brace by Higuain. Own goal by De Ligt, who I think is this season's version of Ronaldo sbaglia rigore, and a brace by Bologna defender Denswil. So Bologna wins 3-2, own goal De Ligt, Denswil brace, Higuain 2 goals for Juve. The comment is Dybala sbaglia rigore, so Dybala is going to miss a penalty. He says Buffon is going to get a red card. Maybe he'll start after the break over Szczesny. He says this is a disaster for Sarri against Sinisa Mihailovic, and that the return from the international break continues to be a nightmare for Juve. In Italian, Juve Bologna 2-3, Higuain doppietta, De Ligt autogol, Denswil doppietta, Dybala sbaglia rigore, espulso Buffon, disastro Sarri contro Sinisa, rientro della pausa nazionale, si conferma un incubo. So I think 1,000's going to pick against Juve every time this year. I'm picking Juve to win this one pretty decisively. Bologna's been okay. One of their best player, Japanese defender Tomisao, though, is out for a while. Tough loss there. I think Juve wins this one pretty decisively. I'm going to go with 3-0. I'll go with Higuain, Dybala, and I'll give De Ligt a goal just to mess with 1,000. Next match, this is a really good one, and this is Saturday morning. We have Atalanta traveling to Rome to face Lazio. Game of the week, in my opinion. 1,000 has it as 1-1, goals by Luis Alberto and Muriel. He says Limone, that's his name for Simone Inzaghi. Limone means lemon in Italian, and Gasperini are going to divide, and they'll get a point each as they wait for another respective failure in European competitions. And he says Correa is a ridiculous player, and that is not in a good way. In Italian, Lazio Atalanta 1-1, Luis Alberto Muriel, Limone e Gasp si dividono il punto in attesa dei loro rispettivi fallimenti europei. Correa, giocatore ridicolo. This is a great game. I'm really tempted to pick my Lazio. You guys know those are one of my teams with Torino and Sassuolo this year, but Atalanta is really good, and we know they are good away from home. So even without Zapata, I'm going to agree with 1,000. I'll go 1-1. I'll give a goal to Immobile, who's been on absolute fire, and I'll agree on Muriel, another player that I like. Last match, Inter traveling to Emilia-Romagna to face Sassuolo. Now, Sassuolo hasn't played in a while because even before the international break, they rescheduled their game against Brescia because of their president Squinzi's death. So they haven't played in a long time. 1,000 has Inter winning 2-0. Goals by Skriniar and Handanovic. And the comment is De Zerbi is so ridiculous that the opposing keeper is going to score on him. 1,000 knows I love De Zerbi. He always DMs me when Sassuolo loses. He says Sassuolo is going to disgrace Squinzi's memory, and that you can see Conte's hand in this result. I don't know if that's part of the disgracing Squinzi's memory. In Italian, Sassuolo Inter 0-2. Skriniar, Handanovic, De Zerbi talmente ridicolo che prende gol dal portiere avversario. Disonorata la memoria di Squinzi, si vede la mano di Conte. So I'm tempted to pick Inter because I like them this season, but I'm going to ride for my boys Sassuolo, who have struggled. So I'm going to go 1-1. I'll give a goal to Caputo, and I'll give a goal to Lukaku. So those are our game picks. Thanks, as always, 1,000. I love that so many of you are following him on Twitter and starting to get his sense of humor. So next up, we have our friend Sean McIntosh. We are going to talk about Lazio. We're kind of going to assess where they are so far this season. So I'm very excited that today on Calcioland, we are going to have a small Derby della Capitale. We're going to hear from our dear friend Sean McIntosh in a second, and we are going to close with John Solano on Roma. So we've had Sean on Calcio Land many times. He runs a great Lazio fan group out in Vegas. He also has a very cool day job in sports. He's the director of ticket sales of the Las Vegas Aces, a professional female basketball team out there. And Sean is dabbling in cultural writing, which I'm going to ask him at the end. So Sean, always a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you so much for coming back on.
As always, thank you for having me on, David.
All right, so let's start here. Very simply, 7 matches in. We had an international break to take some stock. Had a few games in the Europa League. So very simply, if you had to give a grade to Lazio's season so far, what would it be? I'll give you the same option as I gave John. You can go A to F, or you can go 1 to 10, whichever scale you prefer to use.
Okay. Well, look, looking at how we grade Lazio, really from a match-to-match standpoint, is like looking at an EKG chart. So lots of highs, certainly lots of lows. Tons of inconsistencies. So if I'm going to slap a grade on them, I would go with a C. I think they've been as absolutely average as you can be. Certainly, again, moments where they play A-plus calcio. I think matches against Sampdoria, I think they look their best against Roma, despite only leaving that match with a draw.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you know, they get knocked down to a C because they've had those matches against Spal, in which they lost. They drew to Bologna. I think we know with Lazio, especially under the Simone Inzaghi reign, consistency has always been this club's Achilles heel. Really, until they figure that out, it's going to be hard-pressing for them to qualify for Champions League. But they do have a chance this weekend on Saturday to change the trajectory of the season with a huge match against Atalanta. So,
yeah,
you know, we'll see.
Yeah, no, that match against Atalanta is going to be really juicy. Very curious to see that. So, yeah, you're right. They definitely lack consistency. Every time you feel like Lazio's finally getting over that hurdle, they then take a step back and you're like, geez, I feel like I've seen this movie a million times with them. So I want to ask you on 2 players, and one of the reasons why, I mean, look, I tend to always be optimistic about Lazio for some reason, but one of the reasons I thought they were going to do well this season, I'm still convinced they can, is last year, pretty much all their 3 core players, and to me it's Milinkovic-Savic, Luis Alberto, and Immobile, had down seasons. And we'll get to Immobile in a second. He's been great, but I also think Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto have been better. But out of these 2, Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto, who has impressed you the most this season so far?
Well, a year ago, this question would have been about which player had disappointed me more. So I'm thrilled to be talking about both of these players in such a positive light. Both players currently are in the top 5 when you're looking at average match ratings, according to WhoScored.com. It's nice to see SMS back to being that physically dominating presence on the pitch. And he's also contributing offensively stats-wise. When you looked at his production last year, he only found the back of the net 5 times and assisted only 3 times in all competitions. This year, he's already accounted for 2 goals. He's already at that same 3 assists. So it's nice to see that. But in truth, I have to go with Luis Alberto as having impressed me a little bit more. He currently leads all of Serie A in assists with a total of 5. Only Duvan Zapata and Berardi rank higher than him in match ratings. He looks a lot more engaged in the attack. Oftentimes last year, he just seemed to disappear in matches. He's a little bit more involved. But really, taking all the stats away, the biggest reason why I chose Alberto is there was this small part of me that wondered whether his 2017-18 campaign was a fluke. You know, I really wondered that. I wondered, was Alberto the player we saw 2 seasons ago, or was he the player that Liverpool gave up on? Thankfully, I think he's showing everybody why Laziali affectionately referred to him as the magician, because you see that flair in his game that we're back to scoring goals. He's most oftentimes involved. So it's really positive to see that. And that's really why I go with Luis Alberto, because, you know, at the end of the day, SMS still, in a down season, was voted as the best central midfielder last year. But I was a little bit nervous about what we see from Alberto.
Yeah, very well said. I completely agree there. Okay, so now let's talk about Immobile. As I mentioned, off to a great start in Serie A. Last season, for his standards, wasn't good. He had, you know, for a striker, he did fine, but he has really high standards in Serie A. Well on his way to his fourth season with 20 goals or more in Serie A, which really puts him in incredible company. You know, in a lot of ways, he does kind of remind me of Di Natale. Obviously, I put Lazio as kind of a higher notch than Udinese, but, you know, then there's this other storyline, which is really fair to me, and I'm a big Immobile fan, is that on the Italian national team, he's just a complete shell of himself. So in your opinion, is there a reason why there's such a big difference between what we see with him on Lazio compared to the Italian national team?
Well, look, one of the hottest topics on Twitter when we talk about Gli Azzurri is Ciro Immobile. When you look at him in Serie A, you mentioned it. He's currently leading all of Serie A in goals with 7, on pace to have his fourth Serie A campaign with 20 goals. As you said, this puts him in elite company. But when we discuss him about the national team, Ciro and the words elite are really never spoken together. And I'm not here to say that he's been great when he puts on the blue maglia of Gli Azzurri. But I believe when it comes to Ciro, his performances in a national team kit are really exaggerated. I think the vitriol that we see from Azzurri fans when discussing his lack of scoring really borders insanity. To me, it's almost as if Italian fans are blind to the performances of really any other player. They seem to single out Ciro as some sort of a scapegoat, almost as if he's a symbol of the 2018 disaster. But if you rewind back to that qualification period and just look at the numbers, in a time when Italy struggled to score, in a time where we all agree Ventura was not the right manager, Ciro still found the back of the net 6 times in 12 appearances. Now, this isn't elite. That wasn't particularly great, but it also wasn't a disaster. And when we look at his total numbers, again, not great. He's got 8 goals in 38 matches. And I'm glad that you've got John Solano on, because the Roma fans are going to love me for bringing this up. But for comparison's sake, Francesco Totti, the beloved Francesco Totti, finished his career with 9 goals in 58 matches. So, you know, both players underperforming in comparison to what they did with their club teams. But you look at this and it's not the most outrageous thing. Now, as far as why he's struggling to find that same form, I think it's really quite simple. Far too often, he's deployed as a traditional number 9. You see him in a lone striker role with 2 wingers out wide. And this just doesn't play to Ciro's strengths, where he really thrives playing next to a strike partner. Ciro, really an underrated passer, is too often left alone when he's playing for Italy. In Lazio, he finds ways to become part of the build-up play. He's really deadly on the counter. But in Italy, a team that likes to own possession, play a little bit slower, plays much more out of the back, he hardly finds himself in those same threatening positions. He's also a player that earns his living playing on the thinnest of margins on the shoulders of his defenders when it comes to making runs. Now, when you're making those types of runs, it's all about a game of chemistry with his midfielders. And he just doesn't have that same chemistry. That's why you see him called offside so often. You know, and the blame doesn't all fall on Ciro. It falls on the entire team. So at the end of the day, I think the criticism is certainly a little bit unfair. I realize he isn't turning in the same types of performances that merit a ton of praise, but I think people seem to gloss over the performances of others, really singling out Ciro.
Well said. Okay. So let me ask you this question, and our listeners are going to hear Solano's answer later on as well. So looking at, you talked about, you know, the margins for a Champions League spot. You know, as much as I like Lazio, I definitely see Juve, Inter, Napoli on a tier above, but Lazio's in the next tier. competing for that spot. So we have Atalanta off to a great start, crosstown rivals Roma. I'm going to throw Fiorentina in the mix, maybe Torino as well, but I really look at Atalanta, Roma, and Fiorentina as Lazio's biggest competition. Out of these three teams, which one concerns you the most and why?
For me, it's without a doubt Atalanta. I think they've earned it. They've proven to be a real threat, first by actually qualifying last season, secondly by actually following that up with a strong start to this season. You look at the style of play. They currently sit atop the league in goals scored. They boast the second-best goal differential. They enter this season with the most consistency to them. They return most of that same star power that got them the Champions League last season. I think when you look at Roma, they just have too many things to figure out with a new manager. At times, they've looked a little unhinged. And I think their biggest concern is, at this point, just keeping players healthy and on the pitch. And while I love the project that Fiorentina is undergoing, I see them being really replicating a lot of what Atalanta did. I expect them to be a future concern, but until they actually finish out a season in one of the top four spots, I can't go with them. You know, so really lean as Atalanta, and that's what makes this weekend's match so important.
Yeah, and I agree. I agree. Definitely huge, huge game. Okay, so before I ask you about your first article, which I'm really curious, one of our patrons, Jesse, wanted to ask you. So Lotito gave a recent interview to Corriere dello Sport where basically he was complaining about the results of the team. He said that he created the equivalent of a Ferrari with his team and that they need to do better because he's invested significantly on the team. So I want to get your take on this. A, do you think his criticism is fair? And do you think he's setting this up as a way to blame this on Inzaghi if they were to fail to qualify for a Champions League spot or at least have a very strong season again?
Look, this is pretty standard stuff from Lotito. It certainly doesn't baffle me to hear it. He's a president from the old school that likes to insert himself as the center of attention. And one of those things that as Laziali, we've grown to laugh at. His claim that we have a Ferrari of a team is exaggerated. I believe we've got a solid squad, a squad where qualifying for Champions League is a fair objective. I don't want to say we've got, I don't know what the equivalent would be. You know, we've got a nice Fiat. We've got a modern Fiat XL, but certainly no Ferrari. I think he's done a nice job of keeping our top players.
Yeah.
But when it comes to spending, we're not inside of that top four. We are very much outside of the top four when it comes to spending. He's got some work to do. You know, as far as setting us up for failure, you certainly never want a president to waver on his support of a manager publicly. I think there is some PR damage that was made. I believe he certainly gave the Italian media plenty of fuel. But at the end of the day, Inzaghi knows what the objective is. Fans know what our objective is, and that is to qualify for Champions League. Whether we meet them or not, I don't think these comments play into our results. I think if we were to go on a positive run, I think you're going to hear the narrative being that this fueled the team, that the players banded together in support of Inzaghi, and vice versa. If you see us lose, start playing poorly, I think the narrative is going to be that this caused a divisive locker room, caused issues. I don't really buy into it. I believe everybody understands what it is that we're trying to accomplish. Do I wish he said it? I certainly wish he would keep his mouth closed. But I don't think that it's going to create anything internally.
You know, some of the other interviews he gave recently, obviously the one on the normal skin stands out. I can't defend, but I might actually defend him even a step further than you. As you mentioned, a key thing is what you said is he's retained his best players, given them big contract. It's not as easy as people think. I think in a lot of ways he is pretty similar to De Laurentiis. They only sell on their terms, try to keep what they have. So I'm going to defend him even a little bit more than you here. But I agree overall with your sentiments. I think Lazio fans, people were used to Lotito This is more of the same. So let's close on this, Sean. So we've had the pleasure of having you on the podcast many times. You do a great job. That's why we constantly have you back. So you sent me a message a few days ago asking me if you could quote me in one of your articles. So my first feedback is find much better people to quote, but I appreciate it. But I want to ask you, tell us a little bit what you are writing about and where we can read your work moving forward.
Well, look, I'm not a professional writer. I certainly don't claim to be, but when an opportunity arises, I love to pen something on paper. I certainly love chatting about calcio, and it really stems from an article that I put together that you'll see here in the next day or two on Get Italian Football News. Their Twitter handle is @_GIFN. The editor is Chloe Beresford, friend of the podcast.
I know she's been on many times. Many times.
So really it came down out of passion, really thinking about this high trend of recent manager turnovers, this coaching carousel. We've seen it with AC Milan recently, and really just starting to think about my own club and thinking about Inzaghi and when is the right time to let go of a manager. And I posed the question to you and you had it discussed on one of your podcasts of the three checkpoints. Like, what are the three things that you would want your club to review when determining whether or not they would want to sack a manager, and really put some time into that. And you'll see that article here again in the next 2 days. So excited for folks to get to see a little bit of my thoughts on paper. Whether or not this will be a frequent occurrence, we'll see. But I appreciate everybody checking it out.
Awesome. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, one thing's for sure, you will be a frequent guest as long as you're up to on our podcast. I look forward to reading your work. Definitely check out Sean's Twitter account, Sean_McIntosh. If you're ever in the Vegas area and are looking to catch a calcio game, tweet him. Great guy, strong knowledge. So thank you so much for joining us, chatting about Lazio. It was a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, David.
All right. Great to hear from Sean. Always nice to talk about Lazio. So, David, it's also always nice to read these Twitter questions we have and have you answer them. So let's do just that. First Twitter question. Do you think Napoli should extend both Callejon and Mertens contracts?
This is actually really a fascinating situation. So both of them are over 30. They are amongst the highest paid players on Napoli. They are still amongst Napoli's best players. I think especially Callejon. I mean, if I were to speak to someone who doesn't follow Serie A at all, and someone asked me who's really underrated, I think Callejon would be one of the first players I mentioned. Just incredibly smart, can really do it all, offense, defense, even can play central midfielder. Amazing. But Napoli's in a tough spot. I mean, we saw last summer how much having older players on long-term deals at big wages made it hard for Juve to move players. This was a problem for a lot of clubs in Europe, and Napoli doesn't have the revenues that Juve have. They have a very small margin on what they can do. They also have some, like Fabian Ruiz, he's another really interesting contract situation. They need to look at that, and there could be a potential domino effect if they give big multi-year deals to Callejon and Mertens. Today, we're recording this Thursday, De Laurentiis had some pretty colorful comments on both, and he said, they shouldn't expect me to make a huge sacrifice to keep them, and he said if they want to go play in China, and he literally used the word, and have a shitty life in China for 2-3 years to make a lot of money, that's their problem, not mine. That was his quote. So I think ADL's basically saying, look, I'll keep you, but it's got to be on my terms. And again, when I look at Napoli's, financial situation, and they've done a great job of keeping a balanced budget and whatnot, I think they need to tread very carefully. If I had to choose, I would probably, as great as Mertens has been, I would probably try to keep Callejon more. If I had to split the difference, I'd probably make a sacrifice for Callejon and really hope that Lozano, Milik, they can get one more year out of Llorente. They have Insigne. I think they are deeper at Mertens' position. So that's what I think they should do. but definitely a situation to watch. I'm very interested to see how this plays out.
Interesting indeed. Okay, David, next Twitter question. What did you make of Milan's recent financial statement?
So I haven't gone really in depth with it. It came out yesterday. I saw revenues are down, expenses are up. So a couple of things jump out at me. Is like we've talked about plusvalenza in the summer. I feel like that was our word this year. We've had amortization in the past. This summer it was all about the plusvalenza. And we talked about the fact that Milan really didn't make many. The only significant one was Cutrone because he was a homegrown player. The fact that they held on to Suso, Donnarumma, you know, both players they could have made a huge plusvalenza on, especially Donnarumma, good talent-wise, but not good financially. Because they didn't make the big plusvalenza, they are even more in the red. And I think they need to be really concerned with the salary situation because, look, we know this summer they really made a point of not signing anyone to a contract over $6 million before taxes to not have a huge wage bill. And they did get rid of some of the players that were draining it. So the Montolivo, the Bertolacci, the Abates of the world, but they still have, I think, the fourth highest payroll in Serie A, might be even the third. And I don't think they have a nowhere near the third or fourth most talent in Serie A. So it's still a big problem. On the bright side, I think Gazzidis and the Elliott Fund, again, they did inherit a lot of this, but now they really need to start taking action. They are saying they don't plan on making any big plusvalenza in January. But that's when I start hearing Mandzukic to Milan, like right away, I'm like, that doesn't make any sense to me. But again, there's been plenty of times where I said something doesn't make any sense to me and it happens. But I'd be mildly concerned if I'm a Milan fan based on what we saw in that statement.
Okay. I would always be concerned if I were a Milan fan right now, but I'm afraid that's a little too harsh. So I'll move on. David, the next Twitter question, it says, in a perfect world, which players would be ideal additions for Juve, Napoli, Inter, Milan, Lazio, and Roma in January?
Great question. So again, it's early, things can change, but looking at it, I think unless Juve gets Rabiot really going, they could maybe use a midfielder. Now again, Juve would also have to find a midfielder that they could use in the Champions League because that is obviously very important for them. I'm not sure if someone like Pogba money-wise is realistic, but if Rabiot doesn't get going, they could use another midfielder there. Napoli, I really like their lineup, and they need to get all of their new players to fully gel and get their veterans going, but they aren't that deep in midfield. They actually did a career mode in FIFA with them, and I was surprised at how they just don't have much depth there, especially with Raj leaving. There's been already buzz of maybe Hamsik coming back, and maybe this is why Napoli, why De Laurentiis was talking about living a crappy life in China. Maybe Hamsik wants to return. I think that would be fairly cool. I think Inter definitely needs a midfielder, and of all the ones we've talked so far, this is the most realistic. I think they need a physical presence, a midfielder that can be a better alternative. Vicino can't be their first midfielder off the bench. So someone in that mold, but better. I think both Lazio and Roma need another center back. Roma maybe even two. Lazio, they haven't gotten much from Vavro, the highly rated defender that arrived from Copenhagen. Roma, we know they're kind of a mess there, but maybe Smalling and Mancini can evolve in that role, but I'd say both need a center back. And I think Milan could use one player with experience, and as much as I like Mandzukic, I don't think he should be the one because of the role. Maybe a defender, maybe a wing back, maybe another midfielder, whatnot, but just a veteran presence, I think, could help Milan. But I think Milan also has to focus on maybe making a strategic sale in January to kind of help with that financial statement they just released.
Okay. All right, David. Next Twitter question. Do you think Sandro Tonali will ever sign for a club outside of Italy?
It's a great question, and I think the obvious comparison is Verratti. Very similar, because Verratti was very highly rated when he was in Pescara at Serie B. This time last year, we started hearing about Tonali at Brescia and Serie B. Juve came close to signing Verratti. They got Pogba instead. I mean, it could have been. I mean, didn't go really that bad. Would have been great had they had both. And Verratti went to PSG. So I don't think we're going to have a Verratti scenario where Tonali, at least he didn't go from Serie B abroad, and I don't think his next move will be abroad. I think he'll go to a big club in Serie A. He's already been linked to Napoli, Inter, briefly to Milan, Juve. I think it'll be one of those. Fiorentina also has been linked to him, and man, what an addition that would be for Comiso. So then I think, look, if he goes to a team like Fiorentina, which would be rather surprising after that, he probably could go abroad. If he went to Napoli or Inter, maybe not. We know Inter could keep him long term. Napoli maybe as well. Juve, I think, would want to keep him for a very long time. So interesting. So I think his next move in Serie A, so for his whole career, we then have to see where he goes next to kind of gauge, you know, how likely is he to leave there.
All right, fair enough. David, next Twitter question. What do you make of Rodrigo De Paul signing an extension with Udinese? Is it just to get a better fee for him?
So, yeah, so De Paul just signed an extension yesterday through 2024. I have to say that was one player that was really surprising that didn't change teams in the summer. I don't know if he's a starter in Argentina, but he plays pretty regularly for them. Very good player. I would say of the teams that are in the battle to avoid relegation, you can make a case he's the best player. On those teams, he had been linked to Napoli and Inter. I could see him maybe at Inter at some point. I think, you know, Udinese had to give him an extension because they didn't sell him. It's not just to then be able to sell him for more, which I think is part of it, but it also he deserved a raise. I think that that goes without saying that when you're a regular for Argentina and you play at Udinese, you should at least be the highest paid player on Udinese, which I believe he is now. So I think it was really more to reward him, keep him engaged. I think Udinese will have to take a look as to where they are in the standings in January, you know, kind of similar to how Genoa had to decide, do we sell Piontek now and gamble that we can avoid relegation without him, which they did, but it had to wait till the last match. So I think Udinese is kind of going to be in the same situation of figuring that out. What do we do?
Okay. All right, David. Can you recommend any good sources of Serie A merchandise in the United States?
So good question. I'm not a huge expert. I mean, look, I've ordered stuff from official stores in Serie A, from, you know, a few teams. That works just fine. The international shipping, you know, is not outrageous. And I'm a believer that you are supporting the clubs by buying directly to them, maybe more than you did in any other situation. I do want to give a shout out to our friends at Italian Football TV, their fall merch. It's not per se Serie A, but it's calcio related. Their fall stuff was really, really nice. We actually might be collaborating with them in the near future on a few things, but, putting it out there, that merch they had for the fall was nice, to say the least. Have you seen it, Alex? Have you seen their new stuff?
I have not. I have definitely not. But I liked everything I've seen from them so far.
Yeah, no, it's got some nice fall colors. It has the famous De Rossi tattoo that he has on his ankle with the guy just tackling someone. It's got some nice slogans. So anything that those kids do turns to gold, and the new ones I think are really nice. I think you'll be quite impressed.
All right. I might have to cop some merch from our friends. All right. Good to know. David, let's move away from football altogether here for this question. Rank these decades in music of the 80s, the 90s, and the aughts.
Okay. So I'm going to have the 90s first, because that's kind of, I mean, I was born in 77. I grew up with a lot of the music from the 80s, but the 90s was really my prime. I think in the 90s, we had grunge, the explosion of grunge. We had unbelievable hip hop in the 90s. We had Wu-Tang, we had Biggie, we had Tupac. It's a great decade for that. We had, you know, legacy acts. We still had Metallica going strong. We had Radiohead break on the scenes. We had Nine Inch Nails, who are now up to be inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, breakout. So I'm going to put the 90s first, also for variety. I think it was really good. I'm going to go the 80s over the aughts. For more the metal stuff, I know a lot of people think of like the hair metal with the 80s and a lot of pop stuff, but we also had the big four thrash bands from in the U.S., Metallica, Slayer, Megadeth, and Anthrax, although I wouldn't say they're really a big four. It's like a big three and a half. That was obviously awesome. We had Motley Crue, the best hair metal band out of them, and they're still, although they're retired, they still have a big legacy now. And then we had kind of Guns N' Roses, who were the beginning of the end of the hair metal era, which Nirvana then wiped out clean. I'm going to have last the aughts. I have to say I wasn't a big fan of the music towards the end of the 90s. I really am not into the whole nu metal, Limp Bizkit, Korn type stuff. So that was the end of the 90s, beginning of the aughts. I did like the New York scene in the early aughts. So with the Strokes, the Yeah Yeah Yeahs, there were the National, some really good bands came from New York. And then I think Wilco has been the best band of this millennium. I went to see them last Friday. I'm really, really into them. I think Hotel Foxtrot, I don't think there's been a better album that's come out since that. That was the beginning of the aughts. So I think there is some good stuff in the aughts. Maybe not as bad as older guys like me make it out to be. But out of those three decades, I'm going to put it last. But one thing that's definitely not last in my heart are our patrons. We really appreciate their support. I always say if you enjoy Calcioland for $3 a month, you'll get basically an extra 2 hours of podcast every month. We have a patron-only segment, usually 15 to 20 minutes. So you can ask questions that we'll answer either on Patreon or on the podcast. And for $7, you get that, as well as 2 weekly articles, game picks. So if you like Calcio and you like Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. And we'll also donate your first pledge to charity, the Insuperabili. Also, while we're on the subject, we had done a raffle. We appreciate people promoting Calcioland. We had three $25 Amazon gift cards. I contacted the winners. We'll send out those this weekend. So thanks, everyone, for the support. Okay, so I'm very excited to be joined by our next guest, more than a regular in Calcioland at this point, John Solano from the AS Roma Press site podcast. So we actually literally just recorded a segment for John's podcast. So that was the first leg of this doubleheader, and now we're doing the return leg on Calcioland. So John, real pleasure to speak to you once again. Welcome back to Calcioland.
Absolutely. Happy to be back. Thanks.
Awesome. So I enjoyed that. Fittingly, on your podcast, we talked a lot more about Serie A in general. You have a Roma podcast. I have a general Serie A podcast. And on mine, we are going to talk about your team, Roma, a lot more. So you'll get two different flavors on the episode. So, John, very simply, let's start here. Roma has played 7 matches in Serie A. They started their campaign in the Europa League. If you had to give a grade to Roma so far this season, what would it be? You can use A through F or 1 through 10, whichever you prefer.
Yeah, so on a scale of 1 to 10, I would probably give it a 5. There are 3 wins, 3 draws, 1 loss. Certainly, I think that 2 of those draws, particularly ones against Genoa, Cagliari, should have undoubtedly 100% been victories. I think a mixture of individual errors and a pretty dire refereeing display in this last match day between Roma and Cagliari, I think that played a little bit of a part in where they are right now. So I don't think they're I think a lot of people maybe underestimated them coming into the season because obviously you have a new manager. They had some more turnover this past summer. But I do think, and you mentioned this on my podcast, that the thing that is most pleasing to me that their identity is full in full force. They already have an identity. They have a style. They know how they want to play. For some teams with a new manager, a bunch of new players, that could take some time to develop. Maybe you don't see that until the winter. So I'm glad that they at least have a semblance of an idea of how they want to play. Because to be honest, I thought it would take quite a bit of time with Fonseca to develop. He plays a much different style than what they're used to in the past. So I think in that regard, they're certainly ahead of schedule. But when you look at the results, they're obviously behind schedule. So that's why I would give it a 5.
Okay. Interesting. All right. So now the next topic that I want to ask you about are the injuries. So, you know, in a way, you know, we see at Milan all these changes, managers, directors, players, but it feels everything stays the same at Milan. And with injuries, in some ways, at Roma, you know, you have new players, new managers, changes, but still so many injuries. We know about the ACLs, but even beyond that, right before the break, which I guess the timing was pretty good, but we had a slew of injuries. So what do you make of this? Do you just think it's a case of the Malocchio against Roma, or is there a bigger issue with this?
I don't know what to make of it because Roma, they've changed medical staff. They have changed the surface of their training pitch at Trigoria, their training center, multiple times. And these problems, they just continue to happen. Maybe they're just cursed. I honestly don't know because I have never in my life seen anything like this. I wish I would have gotten the exact number, but I think it was like in the last few years, Roma have, I believe it's 14 or 15 yeah. players suffer from a torn ACL. And they got extremely lucky because they could have had another one in Amadou Diawara.
Yeah.
But luckily, he only, and I say that with air quotes, he only tore his meniscus. So I honestly do not know what to make of it because the number is just astounding. Roma, a few years ago, they brought in two American trainers, Darcy Norman yeah. and Ed Lippi. I think they're actually near from your neck of the woods, David. They brought them in. And that's when these injuries really started to crop up. So they sacked them about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and nothing changed. These injuries continue to happen. Roma lost Davide Zappacosta during a training session. So I don't know what to make of it because they make all these changes. They upgrade the training pitches, I just said, but they continue to happen. So it's really difficult to pinpoint what exactly yeah. it is. But it's something has to change. I don't know what else they could possibly overhaul, but something has to change because I just can't imagine that. I mean, we're in October and they've lost, I mean, four or five important players already to injury. They've lost Diego Perotti, yeah. Jamie Zunder. They've lost Mkhitaryan. They've lost Lorenzo Pellegrini. They've lost, as I just mentioned, Zappacosta. I mean, it's not like these are their third or fourth choice players. These are guys who you would almost undoubtedly pencil in as first choice. So I don't know if they'll be able to continue to overcome this, but all as I know is that something has to change because it's going to get to a point where, I mean, it's bad right now, but it'll get to a point where, I mean, you're playing Primavera players because you just don't have anybody available. So, yeah, they have to change something and they have to change it fast.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm not as knowledgeable as Roma as you, but it felt to me like they've really done all they can. So now let's talk about new additions on the team. So Petrachi was appointed a little bit later in the transfer window, but did, you know, pretty significant overhaul of the team. Out of the new players, are there some that have impressed you more than others and why?
Yeah, I do think Mkhitaryan brings a level of intelligence that Roma just did not possess last season. Last season, we saw Roma struggle when things got really difficult. They would lose their heads. They make stupid mistakes. I think in his first match, I was just so impressed with just his level of intelligence and maturity. That is something, even for some of the older players at Roma, and the name that it seems like I pick on him a lot, but I promise that's not the case. But Alessandro Florenzi is the name that always sticks out in my mind. He's a veteran. He's played in his role at right back for a number of years now. But things are going wrong. He in particular, he seems to drop his head and he makes these silly mistakes. Whereas when Mkhitaryan came in, again, I feel like he just brought this level of maturity and intelligence that Roma just really did not possess. And I think his versatility has been another thing that has impressed me. I thought when Roma initially acquired him, I thought, oh my gosh, are they really bringing in another number 10? They have Pastore, they have Zaniolo, they have Cristante, they have Pellegrini. Do they really need this guy who, let's be honest, he struggled since he moved to England. He hasn't been playing in his natural role behind the striker. I wasn't overly impressed with his acquisition, but then he stepped foot on the pitch and I was blown away with, again, it just felt like he brought these intangibles that Roma just did not have in the past. Another name is Vertu.
Yeah.
Roma, they brought him on loan, obligation to buy. Now, he hasn't been outstanding. He's had a couple of great performances, and he's had others where he has just not looked good at all. But above all, the thing that they were lacking, and again, he's a much different player compared to him, but I feel like they got in Vertu what they wanted from Nzonzi. They wanted someone to break up the play, good in possession, decent work rate. Vertu's work rate is off the charts. It's something they've been lacking since they lost Nainggolan to Inter. So he's really impressed me with the work rate. Now, he's got to get better with the passing. He makes these very stupid passes at times that you just he leaves you scratching your head. But nonetheless, I think he fits particularly, and I'm very disappointed he's injured, but I think he and Diawara, they complement each other so, so well. And I was very, very depressed when Diawara got this injury against Cagliari because we were really just starting to see what could have been. And I feel like he and Diawara, they complement each other so well. So he's another one that I wasn't down on his purchase because I felt like Roma, they needed someone obviously to replace Nzonzi and they needed someone with a high work rate. I just wasn't sure if he was a name in the profile that really fit the bill. But again, he's done really well so far.
Absolutely. Well said. So now you can pick. It doesn't have to be a new player. It can be a new player. Or it can be someone who is already on the team. Who has been the player who's disappointed you the most so far this season?
Well, only because he's played. I mean, I could say Cengiz Under because he's been injured. I could say Perotti because he's also been injured, and I thought he would play a very critical role. But Perotti's injury more or less paved the way for the arrival of Mkhitaryan. I think just by that, given that he's played a lot, I mean, it's easy for me to say Juan Jesus. You could just go back and see his performance in the Genoa in the first match of the season. Against Genoa, he made two key mistakes that led to goals. So given that he plays a lot, given that he has an important role, I know it's going to sound bad. I'm not picking on him. I like him as a guy, I promise. It's Alessandro Florenzi. I think this is the fifth or sixth season now with him playing in this right-back role. I don't really know. It's just puzzling to me that he still can't deliver a cross that remains in this orbit. Defensively, he's very, very shaky at times, very shaky. He requires a lot of assistance from Roma's wingers. I would love to see, and this is why I thought Zappacosta's injury was more of a blow, because when he did, I believe he has played in the attack one time, but he played a lot in the preseason. I was so much looking forward to Florenzi playing in the attack because I think that would have allowed Zaniolo to no longer play on the right wing. You could move him back centrally as a second choice behind Pellegrini. But Florenzi at right back just has not been good. And again, I really don't mean to hammer this home, but Roma, Zappacosta was supposed to be the guy. He was supposed to be the guy who comes in on a dry loan, who impresses. He's fighting for a Euro place. I thought it was the perfect acquisition, and the fact he got injured I thought was absolutely devastating because, again, just with him playing right back, it's almost like you get another attacker in Florenzi, who he's not a great attacker, doesn't have a whole lot of technical ability, but I at least think up and down the flanks he's very good, just running. I was very, 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 very disappointing when Zappacosta tore that ACL a couple of weeks ago. So given that he has to play right back, given that he has to be that he's now almost by default the first choice right back, I'll have to say Florenzi, just because Fonseca, he's tried Spinazzola there. And during this international break, Spinazzola again has reiterated that he doesn't like playing on the right side. So I don't know if Fonseca, if that was a message to him saying, hey, you got to start playing me on the left, maybe giving Kolarov a little bit of a rest. But yeah, Roma, and we can just say this now. I mean, if we want to talk about January acquisitions, I don't know how they ignore that right back role, because they have to bring somebody in. They absolutely have to.
I was curious to see how long until Florenzi would come up. I should have guessed they would have been here. So okay,
Zdenovsky left. So I had to find someone else.
There you go. All right. So the last two questions, we talked about this a little bit on your podcast, but I'm curious to get your take because you got more of mine. So I want to ask you about Pallotta and in comparison to Fiorentina owner Rocco Commisso, who I have to say, I got to give him credit. If I know Roma fans DM'd you because I was pretty skeptical on Roma going into the season. Let me tell you, I was much more skeptical on Fiorentina. And so far, it's worked out really well on the pitch. But I'd say even off it, Commisso, I think, has made a good impression. So do you think there's anything that Pallotta can learn by what Commisso's done since he took over at Fiorentina?
Well, I absolutely love Commisso's charisma. I mean, he feels like that fun uncle that everybody has. He reminds me, and I'm not sure if I mentioned it on here, but somebody interviewed me about him, and I just said he's one of those characters that has been lacking in Calcio for, it just feels like, the longest time. He fits in absolutely perfectly. Again, very charismatic. He doesn't have that buttoned up business sense. He's almost like a guy you could talk to about football at the bar. He's just very, I don't want to say nonchalant, but very laid back in the way at times he discusses Fiorentina, Serie A, all that good stuff. But aside from that, I know that you mentioned this as well, but it feels like such a minute detail, but just being there. Pallotta, I believe it is a year and a half now. I believe last summer 2018, was the last time that Pallotta set foot in Rome. And I think that's a huge problem. We discussed that letter on my podcast that he wrote at the end of the previous season, where he more or less laid out everything that went wrong in the 2018-2019 season for Roma. He laid a lot of the blame at his feet, and it was almost a bit of a mea culpa, things he could have done differently, things that he learned from it. And in that letter, he said, I needed to be in Rome more, and I do plan on being in Rome more in the upcoming season. And we're seven matches in, and he hasn't been here yet. And he knows that's an issue. I don't need to tell him that. I mean, I talk with him quite a bit, and I think, whether it's me talking to him or other Italian journalists, I think he knows that people view this as a big problem. Now, I don't know why he hasn't decided to return. He usually blames it on stadium issues being taken care of in the United States as to why he hasn't set foot in Italy. So maybe that's the case. The next 30 to 40 days for Roma and the Stadio della Roma are going to be very important. There are some measures that are being taken by the city right now that could see some progress. So I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe that is why he has not stepped foot or returned to Italy. But I think that, again, it seems like such a minute detail of your president being at matches as being important, but it truly is. And again, I don't know how he can go a year, or we're over a year now, we're 15, 16 months now of him not having stepped foot in the city of your team. So I think that 100%, no questions asked, has to change. And it's not just coming once and it's sort of like, you know, I came there, I did my penance. No, you have to be a consistent face. You have to be there. You have to be present. You have to make, I feel like, again, he's getting a lot done in the United States. Does it, if we're just talking about specific details, does it really matter that he's not there? Probably not. He can probably get most of the things done by being in the United States, but I don't think that matters anymore, because again, he's been away for so long. I think we're past the point of, okay, well, semantics. I can get most of this stuff done in the United States. It's beyond that. It's become a huge issue. He has to be in Rome.
Yeah, no, I completely agree there. Okay, so let's close on this. I'm going to give Napoli the benefit of the doubt based on their squad, that they are kind of in the tier with Inter and Juve. And so I kind of see Roma in the next tier. I mean, I originally had Milan in this tier, but I'm going to take them out. I'm going to put Fiorentina in instead. I like Torino, but I'm going to take Atalanta, Roma, Lazio, and Fiorentina kind of in the next tier for the Champions League spot. Out of those, which of those teams concern you more? I think probably Lazio being the crosstown rival is a factor, but looking at their squads more, like, who concerns you more out of these teams?
Without question, I think it's Atalanta. Maybe my feelings on that would be different had they not pumped Roma at the Olympico just a few weeks ago. But it's the scoreline does not do justice to how much better Atalanta were than Roma on that night. They bossed them. Gasperini absolutely gave Paolo Fonseca a lesson in Serie A and Calcio. And Fonseca even admitted afterwards how he got some of the approach wrong and how he got his formation wrong. And I can give him a little credit for at least admitting that. But yeah, without question, it's Atalanta. I think they've reinforced well. My biggest question mark for them was how would they be able to handle, from a depth perspective, how would they be able to handle the European and the City calendar together? Now, they haven't done well in the Champions League at all. However, in the City, they don't even look like they've missed a beat. It's actually surprising. You would almost assume that these negative results in the Champions League would have some sort of carryover and or negative effect on their league performances, but that hasn't been the case, which I'm almost sitting here waiting for that to happen from a very selfish perspective. But that is a thing that has been just shocking to me, that, yeah, they haven't looked good in the Champions League, but they haven't even let that enter their minds when they're playing these league matches. So without question, I mean, they have an identity. They have a bit more depth. Now Zapata is going to be out, but they have Luis Muriel, who thankfully he didn't go against Roma, because I think he scored more goals in his career against Roma than any other club. But very well versed in the Serie A. I think they're the ones without question that pose much more of a threat than Lazio and Fiorentina. Now Lazio, they have the same manager for the most part, the same players. Whereas Fiorentina, you're still getting your legs under you. You have a new president, new ownership. You went over, you underwent a little bit of turnover in the summer. But yeah, without question for me, it's Atalanta, because I feel like, again, they kept the majority of their players. They have a system in place. And again, my feelings on this would probably be different if they hadn't dominated Roma in the manner that they did. But yeah, when I watched them against Roma, it thought, oh my gosh, I mean, I don't know how at this point you could put Roma ahead of them. So if Roma have or want any shot at the Champions League, they better hope Atalanta slip up, because I think they're incredibly strong.
Yeah, well said. I think it's hard to argue against them. I mean, I think just like athletically, they just seem superior. It seems like they can run over any team in Serie A. I mean, I remember when they signed Skrtel and he wanted to leave after 2 weeks. I think the trainings under Gasperini were really something he didn't expect. So well said there. So, John, I can't thank you enough. I was just that we recorded for his great podcast, AS Roma Press. You guys hear me say this all the time, but I love the site that John runs, because it's not just news aggregator. As he mentioned, he talks to Pallotta frequently. You get a lot of exclusive news. Great stuff there. If you want to hear John talk more about Serie A as a whole, there's also the Serie A show. So, John, thanks. We did these two legs. I think it was pretty even. We might have to do a tiebreaker on another podcast someday and do the penalty kicks there. But I can't thank you enough for being such a frequent guest with us. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Absolutely. Thanks again, David.